Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This is it. The time has come.
Saturday night's all right for fighting.
Push him down.
Get in the ring and go the distance with Fight Night. With Adam Catterall and Gareth A. Davies.
You're better than that.
On TalkSport.
Welcome to the Fight Night podcast from TalkSport. Hope you are well. I'm Adam Catterall. Pleasure as always to be in your company. Little bit of T's and C's, you know the script. I want you to subscribe to this and come back to us on a week-by-week basis. Hit the subscribe button on iTunes. You're looking for Fight Night. You can also do that via the TalkSport website, TalkSport.com. Right, let's get stuck in, shall we? Because at the weekend, Newcastle was the destination for a bit of championship title fight action. Savannah Marshall knocking out Femke Hermans. What an unbelievable shot it was to finish the fight. That then set off a little bit of chin-wagging with Clarissa Shields, and we're all heading towards that super big world title unification at some point later this year. So in the immediate aftermath of that fight finishing, we got onto the promoter Ben Shalom. We got him on the show. We wanted to talk about the knockout. We wanted to talk about prospective fights. And he dropped a couple of exclusives on us. Check this out.
When we signed Savannah, we knew, obviously, we had an elite boxer. But we knew we had to build her, and she's headlined now twice in Newcastle, and today she headlined on her own. No, you know, it was all the tickets were sold down to her. I think it's a statement for women's boxing, but then to deliver a performance like that against an opponent that's never been stopped before, very durable, very experienced, and it was a left hook from nowhere. I've not seen, like, even Peter Fury, he says it's hard to do the pads with her. She hits, you know, like a male middleweight counterparts. And we saw that tonight. And it was an incredible event. It was an incredible atmosphere. And Savannah is growing every time she steps in the ring.
We've been talking about this. First rule of being a promoter, Ben, by the way, is never lose your voice.
It's hard, though, when people keep knocking people out like that in front of you.
It is very hard. One of the things that we talked about, as saying to Adam, what I do like about Savannah's style, I think it did come out of nowhere, but she was setting her up for it the whole time. She was working her into the ropes. The great thing, her style now, with the Fury style, of being elusive and throwing, because Savannah is a 6-footer and she's got very long straight punches left and right, and then when she is on the inside, she's got the power with those hooks, and I do think she worked her way onto the inside. Femke Hermans is an awkward opponent who went 10 rounds with Clarissa Shields, couldn't get her out of there, and I think, as you say, I think Savannah's made a big statement tonight. She puts herself as favourite against Clarissa Shields.
You've gone big.
She's put herself favourite in this fight now.
Yeah. As you said, that style perfectly suits Peter Fury's style of training. I've not seen that before in women's boxing. She is boxing like a Fury and it suits her perfectly. She's long, she's rangy, and she waits for the right moment. And I wouldn't overlook Clarissa Shields, 2-time gold medalist. She's never put her foot wrong in the pro game. But that power is undeniable, and she'll have to be on her toes for the full 10 rounds. It's a fascinating fight, and it's a fascinating rivalry.
But listen, we're in the studio, right? And these two went at each other at the end. Once again, they've gone at each other once again. So give us a little bit about what they were saying to each other inside the arena. And as a promoter, let's be straight, right? When she lands that left hook, you know what Clarissa's about to do. You must be licking your chops, Ben, thinking to yourself, mate, we have got a fight on our hands in the summer.
100%. I was nervous tonight, though, because all our plans could have been shattered. And as you said, when she knocked her out, I think Clarissa is a confrontational character. It has been hostile up here in Newcastle. I hope she wants to come back for the big fight after that. But yeah, Clarissa is a champion herself. She thrives on these big challenges. She's been waiting for a big challenge. She even had to go into mixed martial arts to go looking for people that could compete with her. And now she's got someone. And it's incredible. And as you say, they have that history. They have that rivalry. They've known each other since the amateur days. And it's just built perfectly. I don't think we've seen a rivalry like that in women's boxing. I do believe it's the biggest fight in the female sport.
When are you looking to do it? I know you're looking to do it at a stadium. Are you looking to do it, obviously, here in the UK?
Yeah, we hope to do it in Newcastle. We think we should be able to tie it up in the next few days. We had to get through this fight, working hard with Dimitri Salita. It's a complicated deal because the US broadcasters and the UK broadcasters both want it, but it just is it's set up for a big fight, and we should be able to announce it in the next few days.
Are you able to promote that as a pay-per-view event, Ben? Does it move over to there, or is it a regular fight night? Is there a possibility of Amir Khan and Florian Marcoux being on that card as well?
It's a good question, and we've been talking about this for a while. If it is the biggest fight in female boxing, then surely it should be pay-per-view for the women themselves. But at the same time, the flip side of that is, why not advertise and showcase a sport to the biggest possible audience? Because it's going to be some spectacle. And
I agree.
I think, you know, and so we're going to work hard. Look, the numbers are big, so it's difficult, but we are going to work hard to make sure this is seen by the biggest possible audience. I think it's going to be a milestone for the sport.
But not to be unkind to you, to Sky Sports, to Clarissa or to Savannah, that we were talking about this in the build-up when we were previewing it, that Savannah hasn't quite crossed over yet. You're still building her. I think it's a very good move not to make it pay-per-view.
Yes, potentially. Although I would say, have you ever seen a fighter in the women's sport that can sell out arenas? I've not seen it. Name me one. I'm not saying.
Well, Taylor could have sold out Croke Park in 2012 in 5 minutes fighting Minnie Mouse, but they didn't do it. But it never happened. But I'm not going to argue that. I think look, we were up there, weren't we, when Savannah fought in Newcastle the last time, and the reception was extraordinary. And I can see how that builds. I think you keep her there, and you keep her there till there's an audience in the UK that wants to come 20,000 to the O2 Arena. But look at Lee Wood in Nottingham. Look at Josh Warrington in Leeds. Look at, I don't know, Kelly Pavlik in Ohio. Look at Floyd Mayweather in Vegas eventually. If you build someone and you build them in a certain place, that it grows, you know, they will come. And I think you're right to keep her there.
Agreed. And we'll do what we can, as I say, to see it by the biggest audience. But this is a big fight with big numbers, and we'll have to work that out in the next few days.
She wasn't
the
only one.
The question about Marco and Khan.
No. I'm going there now, mate. Don't you worry.
You know what it's like when we got Ben on the show.
Yeah, don't you worry.
He's not going anywhere. Making him blush. Yeah.
I've tripped up one too many times.
Listen,
you're on every week. Yeah. What do you mean?
You're going to get tripped up every week.
I love TalkSport.
That's what you need to say. Good man. Listen, Florian needed something tonight because I thought Chris Jenkins was actually ahead at the fight at the time of the stoppage. He found something deep down in order to get the stoppage himself, Florian, and then he gets on the microphone and he starts rocking it. He says he wants Amir Khan. Talk me through it, Ben, because is that where we're going? We all thought that Amir was maybe heading off into retirement. Is that fight something that you're looking at?
I was worried, you know, with Florian that maybe we matched him too early. He's just gone to Grant Smith. Grant says he's had to sort of start from scratch. He's got all the attributes to be a great fighter, but he's a young boxer in terms of how long he's been professional. But he came through, he knocked him out emphatically. And I think the welterweight division, you've got so many fighters avoiding each other. I think fair play to Florian. He stepped up and he's taken on Chris Jenkins, who did look in good nick. Amir Khan, look, is it realistic? I don't know. Let's be honest. Florian needs to take another couple of steps, I think, up the division. He'll want that fight. Of course he will. I think it would make sense. But at the same time, Amir Khan will have, I'm sure, other ideas. And I don't want to sit here and say that
Ben,
fight's going to happen.
Promoter's hat on now.
Yeah.
Albania. Yeah. you could
I've never done a fight in Albania.
Albania. I haven't either.
Let's
Well, you'll have to come because we are going to Albania.
Yeah, because can you not see? I mean, Florian Marku is a massive draw in Albania. Versus Marku
in Albania.
50,000 outdoors in the summer. We're in. And TalkSport want the broadcast.
Let's do it.
You know what? You two need to come on board with Boxer, I think.
Well, you've been talking to me about that for about a year and a half anyway, so maybe we can just do it now.
It's true. No, look, I'd love to make that fight, but we've got Florian signed up. We've got to get Khan signed up, so let's see.
Okay. Just a quick one before we let you get on with your rest of your evening. You've signed two more Olympians. I tell you, they're coming thick and fast to boxing.
What a signing.
We saw Miss Price and Miss Artistall being signed to you a little earlier on. Talk us through the thought process there, mate.
Oh, just been chasing them for 6 to 8 months. As Gareth said, they're elite athletes. Karis was actually unlucky to only get a bronze medal.
Yeah.
And Lauren's won gold at Worlds, Commonwealth. Yeah. European and then the Olympics. I think she's special, so it was a no-brainer for us. We chased them, a lot of promoters were chasing them, and we're honestly humbled that they've decided to come with us in Sky. I think they're probably seeing what we can do with Savannah and seeing what we've done with Tasha and Caroline, and decided that this is a place for them. And the women's sport's in really good shape, and I think they're two that we'll see a lot of in the next few years.
I'm very interested. The most interesting thing this morning, seeing you, Adam Smith, Karis and Lauren on a conference call this morning, was Lauren saying that she's going to fight at welterweight, because I got very excited about her fighting at middleweight. Have you got the challenges for her at welterweight early in the career, do you think? Because she's so brilliant. I think she has a fantastic pro style, not an amateur style, so. Lauren, you know?
She'll move through the weights. I think she's going to have such a prolific career, and she'll probably be looking at, you know, Clarissa Shields and multi-weight world champions and thinking, you know what, whilst I'm 27, I'll box at welterweight. I think she's more comfortable then. She boxed at a heavier weight. It just happened that way when she was in the amateurs. I was speaking to her about that earlier. But welterweight seems the right place to start, because she's, as I say, she'll move up and up and up. And I think, she's done everything at amateur. She's done more than anyone's done before. And I think we could see that in the pros as well.
I do think as well, it's a masterstroke that these two women live together. They're a partnership. They announced it a day after the Olympic Games, August the 9th last year. I remember covering the story. And I think they're going to be a real hit, Ben, with the British public, by the way. Just the two of them.
Characters as well. They're absolute characters. Sky are already talking about, can they have their own show? They bounce off each other. Yes. They're two different personalities, but they're huge, huge personalities. And it's just a buzz to be around them. And I think you're going to see that more and more in their fights. I think, as you said, the British public will buy into them, and maybe they will be crossing over into the mainstream. They are that good inside and outside of the ring.
Listen, final one, Ben. You've ticked off the arenas now, mate. When we're doing stadiums, when we're going into the big, you know, the monsters.
Well, Brooke Eubank still on the cards. Hopefully.
Oi, 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 oi. Go on, give it us, Ben.
I've got him. I can't, you know. I actually can't, or I will get in trouble. But we're trying. Look, if you got Kell Brook's either going to retire or he'll fight Chris Eubank Jr. away. That is sensible.
What? Because he's asking $10 million for Conor Ben
at a stadium.
No, but is he really asking for $10 million, or is that?
Go on.
You get himself in trouble on it. He's always getting himself in bother on it.
No, but we love that, and he does a brilliant job of it. And he's doing a fantastic job.
There you have it. Don't book your holidays. We might be getting a stadium fight in the summer. We'll keep you posted with that here on Talk Sport. One stadium fight that's definitely happening a little earlier than the summer is, of course, April 23rd, Tyson Fury versus Dillian White. We caught up with Tyson Fury's trainer on Saturday night, Sugar Hill Steward, who is living in the Fury household. And that is where we started the conversation.
Is he capable of winning? Yes. Do I think he's going to win? No. But Tyson can't afford to fall in with his right hand. Dillian White, brilliant catch counter left hook. Can that put any heavyweight to sleep? Of course it can.
Oh, great shot. He's put him down. And White's put Parker down. It was a left hand. Parker doesn't really know where he is.
he's badly advised, and if he's making the final decision, then he's playing stupid.
It's been stupid games of clawing things tooth and nail while they try to stack the deck in favor of Tyson Fury and against Dillian White.
It's become the Tyson Fury homecoming show.
First question, what I know that obviously you're here in camp training Tyson up in Morecambe. What is it like living in the Fury house?
Living in the Fury house is quite comfortable, to be fair. And I enjoy it a lot. One of the things that I truly enjoy is the sunsets that I have here in Morecambe Bay. It's one of the most beautiful sunsets that I've seen throughout my travels. So I very much so enjoy this sunset. I love the being by the water. And one of the things that's kind of strange I love the smell. It's like the smell of fresh air and horse manure. it reminds me of being a young boy going down south to Alabama to visit my grandparents, or to West Virginia to visit grandparents. So
fantastic.
Fond memories.
Fantastic. Now, listen, we know about spending only a small amount of time around the Furies. We know that Mrs. Fury is the person in charge. Have you got any chores to do whilst you're staying at the Fury house?
I have no chores to do at this particular time, but if I find, normally with me, if it's something that's maybe that's broken or needs fixed or tightened up, or yeah, just any little thing like that, something loose, I'm normally the one to do it. I'm just pretty handy with my hands and always trying to stay busy doing something. So I don't mind it. I enjoy it. I'd do it anywhere.
So you don't put the bins out and do the school run at all then, no?
I've done the school runs.
There you go.
One of the things that I'm pretty commonly doing is barbecuing. I'm on the grill.
Good man.
Okay.
Everybody loves me on the grill.
But you don't mind our spring with a bit of snow. You've had a bit of snow up there in the last couple of days, I take it?
I didn't get any snow. I don't know where it's at, but it missed me.
So come on, you haven't had a chance to see Dillian White, have your man in front of Dillian White. I don't think we saw you at the press conference in London, Sugar, but how is Tyson and how's it going?
Tyson's excellent. He's in high spirits. He's ready to make his big fight in London at Wembley Stadium. Sold out crowd. It's an exciting time, full of energy, full of just 100% ready to go. And for myself, I'm feeling the same way, and I'm liking and loving the way Tyson Fury is feeling right now.
From speaking to you in the past, Sugar Hill, your teaching methods are always about your student and the best things that they can do and them implementing them in the fight. But how exciting is it to get your teeth into a new opponent for Tyson? Over the last couple of years, obviously, you've been concentrating really on one particular guy and how to beat Deontay Wilder. Now we've got a new opponent in there. Have you found that challenge quite exciting and reinvigorating?
That's a good question, and to me, it is a little bit more exciting now, getting ready for someone else and not Deontay Wilder. So at this point, this is the opportunity for me to teach and for Tyson to also do some new things that he wasn't able to do with Deontay Wilder, some things that we worked on in training camps leading up to this fight, not just this training camp, but some things that we worked on that he wasn't able to do or didn't have to do in a fight with Deontay Wilder that I'm expecting to see be very exciting in this fight with Dillian White.
Why is that, Sugar? Is it talk to us about the styles with Dillian White and what you want from Tyson, what you want him to display in this contest?
In this fight, I'm looking for one thing mainly from Tyson Fury, and that's just punch placement. It's the ability to place the correct punch at the right time, and looking for something, a big exciting bang after that.
So you're looking for the knockout, yeah?
Always, they always look for the knockout. Yeah. That's the Kronk style, yeah, man. That's what they're going for.
I don't know anything else but that. It's difficult for me to train anyone, for that matter, to go a decision. I just don't really believe in that myself. It's trying to train somebody to go for a decision when you have the opportunity to train for a knockout. Mm-hmm. Why would I sell myself short? I feel like if I train a fighter to go for the knockout, if he doesn't get the knockout, he or she doesn't get the knockout, then if they come short of the knockout, at least they put enough effort into it to win that fight versus just going for the win and coming up short there and you're getting either a draw or a loss.
But the thing is, and there's been a lot of talking points around this, is the silence of Dillian White. Not there at the press conference. That didn't seem to trouble 170,000 people getting on an online queue to get the 85,000 tickets extended to 100,000 on the night. We look forward to hosting you there as well, because I don't think you've been to a big Wembley Stadium fight yet, if I'm right in thinking. But what do you make of if Dillian White was your guy and he wasn't saying anything, do you buy the fact that it's kind of stopping Tyson Fury getting into his head, as a lot of people have kind of postured?
I've kind of thought about that, just gave it a little bit of thought, that maybe that's maybe part of a strategy to not get Tyson riled up and giving him more fuel for fire. But Tyson Fury is gonna wire himself up, so he does, obviously doesn't need anybody else around just to get him wired up and amped up for a fight of this magnitude. Mm. He'll do it himself. You saw him at the press conference; he had his own stare down with himself. So it doesn't seem any kind of a problem for me and Tyson Fury going into this fight without Dillian White participating, showing up or even having any comments to say. Sometimes when you don't say anything, it makes it worse. But we'll find out and we'll see soon, April 23rd.
Regarding sparring partners, we saw on social media this week Tyson posing with Jarrell Miller. Was that his thought process to bring Jarrell in, or was it yourself? And what's the thought process behind that?
Well, we talk about bringing in sparring partners, so it's not one person just saying, hey, let's bring in this guy. But Jarrell's a great asset to this training camp with his size and his physical strength and attributes that he's going to give in helping to prepare for Dillian White. I was excited that Jarrell Miller is here training. And, it's a good look. I mean, I'm also able to teach Jarrell Miller some things so that we can have the best possible work going into this fight in preparation to scoring an exciting knockout against Dillian White.
One of the things, though, that there is critique of Jarrell, because he has tested positive for several banned substances, and there's a lot of people saying that he shouldn't be allowed back into the sport. That's risen this week. What's your take on that, Sugar?
My take on it is people make mistakes. I'm not sure of everything involved in his situation. For some reason, I just don't read into all that stuff into the sport as far as, that. But I'm sure that Jarrell isn't the only fighter that's been tested positive but still is in the sport. Mm-hmm. So if someone does something wrong, do they have to be punished in a lifetime for it? Mm-hmm. And if so, then where do we stand in boxing as far as that decision made? It's just he's, I guess, served a suspension and his time is up. Just the same as if someone committed some kind of criminal offense and their time is up that they had to serve, and they're able to go on and live their lives without making a mistake again.
Yeah.
And a lot of those people have gone to be very successful and role models, and actually from those experiences are able to teach others and to be able to help others so they don't have to go through the same thing that they went through. And that's just a part of life in general as far as learning and teaching someone else. You may go through something that somebody else doesn't have to go through because of your experience and your ability to teach them and to kind of steer them in a better direction than you were yourself.
Good news as far as you're concerned that there's now talk about Alexander Usyk and Anthony Joshua getting the fight on for the WBA, IBF and WBO titles. And secondarily, what's your view if it does go to Saudi Arabia?
My view is, this may sound familiar too. This is a quote from John Ferry. I'm not even bothered. Not even bothered thinking about that. I don't have any thoughts of that. It doesn't really cross my mind until it's been asked of me as right now, and I'm not even bothered.
It's not
something that I need to be concerned with. No. My concern is Tyson Fury fighting Dillian White April 23rd. For me, thinking about that would take my attention and my focus away from Tyson Fury. And I don't want to do that at all.
Talk of the devil, though. Where is he right now? Is he in bed? Is he tucked up in bed? Has he got Paris on the sofa?
Is he got a baby monitor on him.
He isn't sitting... He isn't sitting next to you at the moment, waiting to dive in. On the sofa with the six kids and
he's
and
on
Paris.
One sofa. He's on one sofa and Big John Fury's on the other sofa.
Excellent.
Him and Tommy are on the other sofa.
Are they staring at you now saying, no, we're not going on air?
No, I came upstairs because we were watching fights. It's pretty noisy downstairs, so I came upstairs to my room so I can do this interview.
We appreciate it. Just a quick one on the Joshua thing, Sugar Hill. Obviously, there was a period of time there where he was looking for a new trainer, and the style that he might need in order to beat an Alexander Usyk, I would think, as an uneducated person looking at it, I would think that maybe a Kronk style would be the style that might be needed. Did you get the call? Did he reach out to you?
No, I didn't get a call from Anthony Joshua. We did speak briefly, but I didn't get a call from him concerning that. It was about just a hello. We hadn't spoken before, and I was just around somebody that known him, and we just spoke. That was about it.
Okay. Finally, before we let you get on with your evening, have you sampled the local delicacies? Have you been to the fish and chip shop? Have you got stuck?
You know I've been to the fish and chip shop. Why? First day I got here, I went to the fish and chip shop. I went to the Markham Hotel.
Good man.
Which was my first time eating fish and chips from there, but they have a very delicious fish and chips. It's very crunchy. A great proportion of fries.
You're gonna get some free stuff here now, Sugar Hill. Go for it, man.
And some peas. But normally I always visit Atkinson's or another one.
Drop them all in, man.
Start dropping some names in.
You're only allowed it once a week, remember?
Yeah, exactly. Stay in shape, my man. Top man.
But I've been on a diet actually since I've been here.
Oh,
I was I lost 19 pounds.
Oh, wow. Good. So I'm looking forward to seeing you. Absolutely.
So I'm nice and fit, ready to take my shirt off.
Okay. As we do.
I just had some fish two days ago, so it was Friday I celebrated. And was that Friday they come? Yeah, it was Friday. Yeah.
Fish and chips on Friday.
Yeah, I had nice fish and chip Friday. Shane and Huey, the brothers, came to watch the sparring and to sit down. And we hung out all night, ready. But yeah, we had a nice good portion of fish and chips with the gravy. Oh, it was delicious.
You're making me hungry. Listen, Sugar Hill, I'll let you get back downstairs to the boys. Thank you so much for giving up a bit of your time. Go well with camp, and we look forward to seeing you at the back end of April. Yeah. All right, sir?
See you soon.
Sunday is barbecue. It's the barbecue day. So every Sunday I'm on the grill. So tomorrow is beef short ribs.
Beef short ribs? Oh, nice. Know that.
Yeah, tomorrow's beef short ribs on the menu.
Yeah. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come.
And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The week after that Tyson Fury-Dillian White fight, we've got an absolute cracker in the United States where the super featherweight division will be unified between Oscar Valdez and Shakur Stevenson. What a mouth-watering fight that is. We caught up with the WBC super featherweight champion Oscar Valdez this week to give us a little preview.
I can't wait for April 30th to step in the ring and just give him my best. Give him my best. You know, I always tell my fans, I will never promise you a knockout. Knockout of a year, a war, and something extravagant. But what I will promise my fans is that I will always give my best, leave my blood, sweat, tears, heart, everything inside the ring and just give it my best. And every time I do that, something magical always comes out. So everybody could just expect that from me. You know, I'm going there anxious and just try to give the fans what they want, which is a good fight, and try to give myself what I want, which is the victory.
Absolutely. We're looking forward to it, man. We can't wait for the fight. Before we look ahead to it and the stylistic matchup between you and Shakur, let's look back at 2021, because I've no doubt that it was a bit of a roller coaster for you. At the start of the year, what a fight, what a finish, what a performance against Burchell. One of the performances of the year, one of the knockouts of the year. And then obviously in the middle of the year, it went from highs to lows. How do you look back at 2021? And the emotional roller coaster that was for you?
Well, the best way I can describe it would be a learning experience. Learning experience and not falling for the trap. You know, when you win and you look great, everybody's behind you. Everybody's cheering you. Hey, champion. Celebrities are around you. Maybe a lot of friends, so-called friends. And sometimes, you know, you go with the hype, you get too excited, you start believing it. You start believing in a lot of things that you are invincible and you are, you know, with the term, you are the champion. But then one slight mistake out of nowhere comes out and it starts going downhill. That you also learn from when you're down. You know, when I consider that to be one of my lowest that I've ever been with all the situation with the anti-doping. No, it was a complete shock for me. And it was more of a shock that the world and the boxing community will actually think that I was cheating or trying to cheat. That really broke my heart because I've never cheated in my life and I will never think about cheating. And the substance that came out positive was not even a PED, performance enhancing drug. It wasn't even a performance enhancing drug. It didn't make me any better as far as hitting harder or being faster or being, it doesn't help me in any way or form of as far as my condition or on the contrary, it will be considered as a diuretic. So it really broke my heart seeing the fans and seeing a lot of people use that against me. Mm. And like I said before, you learn from those experiences because when I fought my last fight, it wasn't my best performance. On the contrary, I would say it was my worst performance of my entire career.
It's a tough thing to do that, though, isn't it, Oscar? Because obviously reputation is a very strong thing, and I know that you're proud of your reputation. And to have it tarnished and to have fans speak of you in an opposing way than what you probably wanted them to speak of you must have been a very difficult time last year.
We're only human. We're human and a lot of people will say, well, ignore what they say. Who cares what they say? You know, look at you. You're this, you're that. You're in a good position. But on the contrary, sometimes you do pay attention to what they say. That's the mistake that sometimes we make. Mm. We pay attention to people who are criticizing you, but they don't know the hard work that we put. And I don't know what their intentions are. Maybe their intentions aren't to give a constructive criticism. Maybe their job was to bring you as low as possible, And the worst thing about it is that a lot of people did it. You know, they got what they wanted. What they wanted to bring me down. You guys got it. I was at my lowest. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that people were believing the fact that I would even consider taking a performance enhancing drug, which it wasn't. If people would take the time to investigate what that substance was, they would realize it's a diuretic, no big deal. But, you know, you learn from that, you learn from experience. And I learned a lot that, you know, a lot of people who you think had your back, a lot of friends, a lot of boxing friends who I thought had my back, got on Twitter and gave their point of views and called me a cheater. So I give more attention to that, to the real fight. That's in the past.
Yeah.
I already learned from it. Right now, I'm a different animal. I'm focused on the fight. I don't care what the commentators think. I don't care what my neighbor thinks. I don't care what my friends or fans or, you know, it's a reputation. Of course, I want them to believe that I'm working hard and I'm giving my best. But there's only so much you can control. And right now, I can control what I have right here in my hands and my body and my work ethic. That's what I can control. And me and Eddie Reynoso are doing a great job in the gym, training hard. So just giving my best for this fight against Shakur Stevenson.
Why Shakur? Because I was led to believe that we were going down the route of maybe Emmanuel Navarrete. And then it was you that changed your mind. You went, listen, no, man, we're going down this route. So why?
Well, because it was a lose-lose for me. And I've never ducked no fighter out there. I've never been afraid of fighting nobody. And Shakur Stevenson been running and talking in his mouth and about where he'd been scared of him. And the worst thing about it, where it really triggered me, and it was when the fans started believing him. Every time I walk in the streets and somebody would ask for a picture, they would ask me, hey, when are you going to fight Shakur? And I started noticing, okay, people want to see that fight. They don't want to see Navarrete. So if I win against Navarrete, people wouldn't give me the credit that I deserve because Navarrete is a great champion.
Yeah.
He's a tough fighter.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't get no recognition. And if I lose, well, you know, you lost against someone who you shouldn't have lost. Now, Shakur Stevenson, everybody wants to see that. And they want to, and I feel like I got a lot of support from people wanting me to win this fight, from my Mexican crowd and from a lot of people around the world. You know, they want to see me win it. So they wanted Navarrete for sure. And we declined it. I talked to my manager. I said, oh, we don't want that fight. Give me the Shakur fight because everybody's going to believe. You know, there's a lot of things that happen in boxing that people don't know. And people just see the outside. They see what the people who Twitter, who have it in their hands. And a fighter could go out there. I could tweet right now that the Shakur is scared of me, and a lot of people will believe it. And that's how the game of boxing has been working for the last years. You know, they wanted me to fight Navarrete. It wasn't me who chose it, but they wanted me to do it. But if I were to choose that fight, if I would have accepted it, the fans would have believed that I was scared of fighting Shakur, which has never been the case. So that's the main reason why we just said, you know what? I don't want no fight if it's not Shakur Stevenson.
I like it. It's been building nicely, obviously, since Feather when he was number one, and then obviously you moved up in weight. It's just been building very nicely to this particular point. Stylistically, how does this match up? Because people keep telling me it's Bull versus Matador, and I'm going, are you taking the mick? This guy's an Olympian. He knows exactly what he's doing. He knows how to box, going backwards, forwards. Both of you have got brilliant styles. It could be anything, this fight. How do you see it?
Well, me being realistic with styles, you know, we might not get what we want as far as the war.
Yeah.
People love seeing wars. They like seeing Arturo Gatti and Mickey Ward. They like seeing Marco Antonio Barrera, Eric Morales. They like seeing Oscar De La Hoya, Fernando Vargas. They like seeing tough fights. This might not be the case.
This is a brand
this
fight.
Might be,
this is a brand
this
fight.
This might be a chess game.
Yeah.
A chess game. It's not going to be a war, but it's going to be more of a chess game. And people feel like they forget that, just like you said, I'm a two-time Olympian. I could also box as well. Do I prefer? I prefer to bang because I grew up watching my idols, Marco Antonio Barrera and Eric Morales, Juan Manuel Marquez, Julio Cesar Chavez. I grew up watching these fighters and in a way I want to mimic them and I want to give the same energy they gave to me. I want to give it to the next generation down as far as give good fights. But I choose to fight that way. I could also box. I could also move. I could use my legs. I could jab. I could use the outside, the distance. And this might be one of the cases with a fighter like Shakur Stevenson, because I'm thinking he's going to expect me to just go straight forward to him, you know, stay stiff and just let him, you know,
do his thing,
take the shots. Yeah. You didn't throw shots, but it might be another thing coming for him.
Last weekend in Leeds saw a new world champion crowned. In fact, there were multiple world champions crowned last weekend in Leeds. Josh Warrington was one. The other was Ebony Bridges. And it was her that joined Gareth on the show.
And the crowd rise to this last exchange of this compelling contest.
Great fight. Neither girl took a backward step.
She came and she brang it. I've been manifesting this. You know, I've been saying and talking as if I am the champion. I knew that I was going to be the world champion.
I didn't think I won, but you know, you just never know in boxing with the judging. So when they did announce and they knew, like, I was like, I was just so happy, obviously. And it is just a point that, you know, all the hard work that I've put in, all the sacrifices that I've made, all the, you know, the backlash for everything and all that, that it's now kind of like it's all been for something. And I was able to prove myself. I mean, I feel like I've done it already. Over and over, but I mean, I think this is, you can't take this away from me. You know, I just beat, you know, a long reigning champion for a legitimate world title belt, you know, and I did it with like
a toe to toe scrap is what it was.
Yeah.
It really was. Yeah. Like, you, I was saying during the broadcast that it looked like you were glued together almost, you know?
Yeah, that's my kind of fight. She fought my fight and I was having so much fun in there. For me, that's my style, that's my natural style. So I was just it just felt so comfortable. I felt really relaxed going like that and just letting it all flow, because that's just what I do. That's my bread and butter. So it was really fun.
You and I have touched on this before, because you're so comfortable about your physique with not many clothes on, because you've done that in, you know, posed bodybuilding. Yes. And so on. It's nothing new to you, but maybe it's new to a lot of boxing people. Now, I've been pilloried in the past for comparing you. I'm not going to say the name right now. You know who it is. One of the greatest. But my point was, it was taken out of context. My point was,
yeah, I know, yeah,
you're very different. And they're you're doing nothing other. I know it's a bit of fun for you in the way in as well, and you're very comfortable with it. And it does draw attention. Maybe it will always be there, particularly with your way into a particular thing. It's part of the promotion. It's about people getting used to different norms as well, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, definitely. Look, you know, I look just as forward to weigh in as I do the fight. Like, it's just another, it's like an event. It's another event for me, which I love. You know, and it's not just about, you know, me standing there in like nice underwear. You know, it's also just the way I have the stage presence. It's called stage presence.
Let's talk about the future. Obviously, you've got this, but it's so important now to retain the title and unify, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. 100%. You know what I mean? I think it was a big win for me to obviously beat the longest reigning champion. It wasn't a vacant title. It wasn't just fighting someone for a vacant title. It wasn't fighting a fresh champion that's been a champ for a year and to their first defense or their second defense, you know. Cecilia was the real deal as well, you know. And I think that now, you know, obviously that was a good achievement for me. And now it's given me confidence to know that I can defend it, you know what I mean? Because I've just beat someone so experienced, and I believe in myself and everything I've learned. But I'll be looking, obviously, to defend and then unify. You know what I mean? I'm the biggest name in the division, if not one of the biggest names in women's boxing at the moment. So now that I've got a belt, not only I had a target on my back before just because of I was the blonde bomber, but now I've also got the belt. It's a bigger target, you know, and there's just so many options. Anyone will fight me, you know, because they know they'll get the money and they'll get the exposure.
You mentioned Shani. That's obviously Shannon Courtney. Amazing fight you had with her a year ago.
Yeah.
Interestingly, even though you and her are rivals, and I suggested on one show recently that sometimes when there's so much enmity, so much rival between two people, they actually don't want to fight again. Now, You shamed other people for fat shaming her the other day. You stood up for her. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I did. You know, I see a lot of stuff on the internet, having a dig at Shannon and her weight and the comments and the pictures, and people send it to me because they think it's funny, obviously. And I just don't.
It's not funny.
I just
is it?
Don't.
It's not funny.
No, yeah. I don't like it. I don't care if she's my enemy or my rivalry
in the ring. Yeah.
Especially as a fellow female fighter and a fighter in general that knows that you put on weight between fights like you do. And also the fact that she used to have weight issues. Mm. She's obviously very, very insecure, you know, and I just, you know, I hate to say it, but I feel sorry for her because, you know, like I could just imagine what that's like. And I know what it's like when people say I'm not like the same I am when I'm jump on the scales. Like, I'm not going to look like that. I look like that for a day. Why do you think I leave, you know, milk it so much? Do you know what I mean? But honestly, like I'm just like, don't tease her or don't shame her for what she's like now. I mean, I'm all about, I'll give it to her when she doesn't make weight on the scales because she have one job. Do you know what I mean? Especially as a world champion, you have one job and that's to make that weight on that day. And as long as you can make weight on that day, then it doesn't really matter what you walk around with off season, like out of camp. Like, that's your own problem. It's just going to make it harder for you. But it's not like someone, I just don't like the shaming of it. So like I did say, save it for if she doesn't make weight again. Do you know what I mean? Because that's the job. But it's not her job to stay, really. It's not really her job to stay at her fight weight all year round. Do you know what I mean? And I just think, like, you know, she's had an injury and she's had issues with her weight before. And I just didn't like it. I just, you know, because deep down I'm a good person, you know, and I have a heart. And I felt sorry for her because I just would hate to be in her shoes. Like, I feel, you know, like, yeah. Like, there's other things she's done, which I'm thinking, you know what, yeah, she's an idiot. But I don't like that.
Is it? Are you looking to fight Shannon Courtney next?
To be honest, I want her to get a belt. She didn't want to fight me when you know, after she finished fighting me, she made a big point of it. You know, she means nothing. She's nothing to me. But in reality, she's even less to me than I would have been. At least I was a name to her. Do you know what I mean? Like, she doesn't, you know, like, I don't need her. I could literally fight anyone. Like, and do you know what I mean?
But that's a big fight here, though, in Britain, isn't it?
Of course.
You know, you have a presence here in Britain and a following now. It's a big fight here, isn't it, that rematch?
I think it's a big fight all around. You know, a lot of people around the world tuned into that fight. Everyone wants to see it. But I think I would like it to be for a unification. So I do wish her well. I hope she wins the belt so we can make it for a unification. Otherwise, I'm going to defend and unify myself and then maybe I'll give her a shot. Do you know what I mean? Just as a... I go, yeah, let's have the fight. You know what I mean? But I want to go and get my goals and smash my goals out.
As Ebony was just talking about there, unifying divisions is her ambition. It's also the ambition of Michaela Meyer, the unified super featherweight world champion. She wants to become undisputed. Gareth caught up with her a little earlier on this week to talk about the prospect of making that fight with Baumgartner happen.
There's not like a ton of footage of Jennifer Hahn online. But we obviously, the Katie Taylor fight is what we've been looking at because that was the most recent. So, you know, we see how she moves. We see what kind of worked well for Katie. You know, I don't think I have a similar style as Katie. I think that maybe I have a little bit more of a pro style than Katie. And so I definitely plan on using my jab and punching behind that and setting combinations up. And yeah, like I said, I want to show my ring IQ in this fight.
You had a recent trip to the UK. You experienced British fans. You did some commentary. Tell me about your trip to the UK and what you got out of it.
Loved my trip to the UK. They love boxing over there. I mean, you just see, like, the energy is just so different. I want to experience that when I fight. So I really, really want to get over there sometime this year and hopefully get to fight and build some more British fans. But
not
it was great.
An opponent in mind for over here, Michaela?
I don't know. There's so many. I mean, I obviously it would be great to fight somebody with a British person. Yeah. you know, there's obviously Natasha Jonas out there. There's other girls a little higher up, you know, Chantel Cameron, if I were to move up a little bit in weight. Katie Taylor, I would love a big fight against her. I mean, but women's boxing is thriving over there. So there's plenty of, I think, especially my weight division, you know, 130 40. I can fight anywhere between that. And there's a lot of girls there for me, a lot of big fights for me. I don't want to stay at 130 for too much longer because I know that there's so many other big fights.
Do you have to cut much weight to do 130? I mean, you're 5'9", 5'10 anyway?
Yes, I do. I cut a lot. Started this camp out at about 152. So that shows you that I'm 130. I woke up this morning at 138. So it's been an 8-week bar to get down a good amount of weight. It's a little harder now. I get stuck at certain weights and it'll take me a week or two to kind of break that hump and then I'll get down, but it's very disciplined. And so, you know, I think that I will be a little stronger moving up 135 and 140, and I have the height to do it. So, you know, there's no reason for me to keep forcing myself to get down to 130. If I had to for the big fights, I get that, but there's other fights for me also. So, I'm excited. I'm excited to test myself in different weight classes also.
You mentioned Tasha Jonas there. Also, she's champion now at 154. Yeah.
Forgot about that. Yeah.
Is that doable for you at 154 with Tasha or not?
That's just like a silly jump from 130 to 154. I mean, I know she did it because she wanted the opportunity to win a world title. So she has a reason. I don't really have a reason to do that. There's other fights.
Yeah.
I don't think if the fight with Natasha Jonas is worth me jumping up three weight classes. It just doesn't seem like
at
this point. But maybe she wants to down to a lower weight.
Have you got a view on, you mentioned Katie Taylor as well, obviously that could be at lightweight. So have you got a view on what happens between Amanda Serrano and Katie Taylor?
Yeah, I'm not trying to pinpoint like an exact outcome. I've been kind of broad with my statements on this, but I think that Katie Taylor is a very sound amateur style and Serrano a very sound pro style. And I don't think that Taylor has really transitioned into that pro style all that much. She has a very amateur style and it's a great one. It works for her, right? She's done well with it. But a style like that with a really high punch count kind of overwhelming a pro for the first few half of the fight. And so maybe she'll take the first half. I see Serrano kind of a good sound pro will be able to kind of close that space and impose themselves later on in the fight. So I see her sort of taking the second half, but I'm going to predict that it goes to decision and we'll just see who had the better game plan, who was more disciplined.
Are you going to be there or not? Will we see you there?
I am going to be there. I bought a ticket. Great. Be there dressed in all white. I'm telling everybody I'm going to be in the white corner, neutral corner.
Yeah.
Who wins? They both, you know, they've been great role models, or they've been great pioneers in this sport. They've done so much for the sport. I have respect for them both. And so I really don't care who wins. I'm a fan that night. I just want to see a great fight and I would love to fight the winner. I would love to challenge myself against the winner of that fight. And I think it would be great. And that's definitely on my list.
So when I'm there on the ring apron, you'll be pushing up against the ropes and trying to get in the ring, going nose to nose with the winner, no? In New York.
No, I'm not going to cause any problems. I'm not going to take away anyone's shine that night. You know, that fight's not about me. But, you know, I am working my way to the top of the pound for pound list, and I want to challenge myself against the best, and they're up there. They're the best right now, so.
Just finally, Michaela, just for anyone listening, and I don't mean just women, but for anyone listening, obviously you've been an athlete first and then, you know, a boxer, an Olympian, and certainly going towards that and wanting to be an Olympic gold medalist. Have you been through tough times where you've wondered whether it was all worth it and that you've had to find something in yourself just to say, no, this is worth it. It is what I want. I am going to put myself out. It will come to fruition in the end, as it has for you? Have there been times where you've had to kind of just go through a tunnel and come out the other side?
There's definitely been ups and downs through this whole process. I mean, you know, when I went out for 2012 Olympics, made it to the finals of Olympic trials, didn't make it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was like my first hump because I was like, okay, I came this close. Now 4 more years is a long ways away. And it was more like mentally challenging than physically because you have to wake up every morning and like with this goal in mind, with little daily reward, you know, and just keep pushing for 4 more years when nothing is certain. Nothing is certain at all. So, and you're not making any money, and it's just, you really, really have to love and be passionate about the sport and really love what you're doing. And I did. So, you know, then I make it to Rio, I qualify, and then, you know, I don't medal. And the Olympics wasn't the experience that I wanted it to be. I didn't feel fulfilled afterwards. And I went through another sort of hump. But I never really thought like, okay, this isn't something, maybe this isn't going to work out for me. Maybe I think of another career path. I never thought that. I just thought, okay, to redirect myself. Mm. And that was the reason why I took the chance to turn pro. I knew that after the Olympics that I didn't want to go for another Olympics. It wasn't something that fulfilled me. And I wanted to take my chances somewhere else while I still could and while I was still in my prime as an athlete. And I was willing to take that risk. I almost went to MMA because that's where women were getting the, you know, the exposure and money and the TV time. I didn't, thank God. I ended up working out a deal with Top Rank and being able to stick with the sport that I love. And even if I failed, I was like, I'd rather take my chance at creating the career that I have always envisioned myself having than just sit back and accept this for what it is. Like, no. And so I took a chance to turn pro because I was leaving this comfortable situation I had where, you know, I was living for free at the Olympic Training Center. I was getting a monthly stipend. I had full coverage insurance and yeah. I was whatever, but that wasn't good enough for me. And so it was a risk for me to leave that and take my chances in the pros, seeing as the pros weren't developed yet. There was not yet a market for women's boxing. But I was willing to do that. And I'm so glad that I did. Like, this is the career I envisioned, always envisioned for myself. And if I just stayed in my comfort zone and didn't take that chance to turn pro, then I wouldn't be here. And thank God. So yeah, it all eventually worked out in the end, but you just have to keep persevering.
Whilst we're celebrating female fight sports, it's only fair that we dip over to the world of MMA. One woman that is making some serious waves in the PFL is Kayla Harrison. Gareth caught up with her a little earlier on this week to preview her upcoming fight and the prospect of fighting on UK soil.
How do you transition from being an Olympic judoka and a champion to being a professional mixed martial arts fighter? Was that always the plan?
No, definitely not. It definitely wasn't always the plan. I knew that after the 2016 Olympics, I was going to be finished with judo. I was beyond burnt out. You know, I was like, I wanted to quit before the Olympics. That's how over it I was. And I thought maybe I was going to get a job with the International Judo Federation. I was going to be a commentator. I was going to help coach. And after the Olympics, I sort of fell into a depression. You know, you go from waking up at 5 a.m. every day and never hitting the snooze button to I was a couch potato, man. Like I didn't set an alarm. I didn't leave my house. I was like, I hadn't watched TV in years. And all of a sudden I'm like, you know, six seasons deep in all these Netflix shows. Like it was bad. You know, those in movies when you see the guys, like they break up with their girlfriend or whatever, and they just have like trash all around them. And like, that's how I probably looked. I was like, just a mess.
It's kind of finding yourself again in a way.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I really felt like I still had something left in the tank athletically. And I'm a big believer in, you know, you should do something that sets your soul on fire. You should do something that you're very passionate about. And I wasn't super passionate about commentating. You know, I'm much more of a doer. I don't like to just like watch people. I like to go do things. So about 6 months after the Olympics, I went to a local gym in Boston and I started doing some Muay Thai, just like private lessons, hitting the pads and stuff like that. And I really liked it. It felt good just to move my body again and to learn, like to be a white belt all over again. Felt really good. And about a month after I started doing that, I went to my first sparring session. And that was just such an eye opener for me. I was like, oh man, this is really hard. Like getting punched in the face hurts, you know, like this is hard. And that was it. I was like, I gotta fight. I gotta at least try it. I can't live my life with a what if hanging over me.
So it's almost like a change was as good as a rest in the end. And
yeah.
And has it lit a fire that's as burning as kindled as judo was for you?
Absolutely. I think that if anything, this fire burns a little bit hotter just because I feel like, number one, I don't have as much time. You know, I was 6 years old when I started judo and I'm 31 now. So I don't have as much time to get really, really good as I did with judo. And number two, it's just like, it's judo on steroids, you know, like, of course, judo is, I always said judo is
not literally.
No, not literally, but it's judo. Like, you know, in judo, you have to worry about someone throwing you, choking you, arm barring you or pinning you. And in MMA, you have to worry about a million different things. Are they going to kick you in the head? Are they going to take you down? Are they going to punch you in the face? Are they going to hit you in the body? Like, I've never done anything like it. I've never
kinetic done chess, I always call it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's human chess. And it's amazing. I love it. I'm obsessed.
Now, as you know, in the world of boxing, there's a lot of people that talk the talk, but how many really walk the walk? Well, back in the day, Ray Boom Boom Mancini was one of those guys. He's been in the UK this week, and Gareth went down to a local gym to have a little bit of a chat and a catch-up and to talk about these modern fighters.
I've just written a piece, actually, which brought you into focus for me with on some of the biggest punchers of all time. And obviously, in 1981, you met Alex Zargelio, who arguably is one of the top 20 punchers of all time. 14 rounds. You didn't win that night. But can you recall that contest and how big it was at the time?
Very much so. Because first of all, I love Alexis. He was one of my heroes growing up. You know, my Roberto Duran and Alexis Arguello. I love them guys. Today's fighters, there's no legacy. They fight once, maybe twice a year, and there's no legacy. And I was telling people last night, the one thing I'm proud of is my whole career was only 5.5 years. But the thing I'm most proud of is a champ for 2 years from May of 82 to June of 84. I had 7 title defenses. 7 title fights in 24 months. That's 1 every 3 months.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that, but I'm not the only one. There's a lot of guys during that time. Pedroza, before he fought Barry. He's the champion for 7, 8 years, defended the title 19 times. That's an average of 2 to 3 years. That's what you're supposed to be.
I've seen some comments from you on the lightweight division today. Obviously, what we see today is a kind of talent-replete division, you know, with George Kambosos and Haney about to fight. Ryan Garcia is a young rising star with a big media following. I'm going to ask you about these in a minute. You know, Javonta Davis, Shakur Stevenson could come up to lightweight. The things you're talking about there, they aren't all meeting each other very quickly. Teofimo Lopez is moving up. How do you see that fight between George Kambosos and Devin Haney?
I think, well, Kambosos came to America and beat Teofimo, who, you know, was the most dangerous of them. Him and Tank Davis are two most dangerous punchers at that division. And he walked through. Now, I loved Teofimo, was a friend of mine. Teofimo could fight is like heck. But George Kambosos' determination and desire overcame all that. And what did he do? He dropped him the first round. Oh, that changed the fight right there. Changed the fight. Because now Lopez realized how that happened. And this kid came to fight. And George came, as you say, over, he's a hard man. He came forward, kept coming forward. Determination, chin, you know, no matter what Teofimo hit him with, he walked through it. And then later, Teofimo came on and he wound up dropping Kambosos later in the fight. But Kambosos got up and just won the rest of the round and won the last round or two. Because I think he dropped him in the 10th round. He won the last 2 rounds. My point being is Kambosos was in control of that whole fight from the beginning until he got dropped. You can't deny him the title. And so I have a lot of respect for Teofimo. He was, you know, again, we know now he wasn't 100%, had a hard time making weight. And I know that very well. But the fact of the matter is, he got ringing, he got beat. He got beat good. So I love this Kambosos. I love watching him fight. You know, I don't know enough about Haney. I read a lot about him. I don't know, but I admire him. He's going over to Australia. He didn't ask him to come here.
Yeah.
He's not demanding. He went over, he signed whatever they wanted to get that deal. I'd get admire that. So Haney's going over there. I think Kambosos is just too strong. Now he's, you know, they say when you become a champion, it takes you to another level, confidence-wise. And I think Kambosos will be too strong for Haney because he's strong as hell. I think Tank Davis. Ryan Garcia, I don't know enough about him. I just don't fight Luke Campbell. You know, he's basic. He's basic. There's nothing.
With some power. With power.
You know, he can punch. Yeah, so, okay, so what? A lot of guys, if you hit, if the guy's standing in front of you, look, Luke Campbell dropped him, then he backed up. Why would you come on him, jump on him? I don't understand that. So, and he didn't go and knock, you know, either lock Luke Campbell down or whatever. You know, they stopped the fight. But I'm just saying, Luke Campbell, okay, came in, dropped him, and then was like, okay, I did my job, and that's that. My point saying, being Ryan Garcia does not impress me. I'm sure he's a good fighter. Don't get me wrong, he's a good fighter. But he's not, I'm reading all the stuff, and I don't see, what I saw was not what they're writing about. Yeah, again, you said Devin Haney. I don't know enough about him. I know he got fast hands, can box, very good boxer, good high ring IQ. So I'm anxious to see him. But Tank Davis is the best of them.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask. Who emerges as the best of the era in that? It's Davis.
Tank Davis. Yeah. I've been up and close to saw Tank when I was doing commentary for Fox. Yeah. Tank Davis hits. He's a junior lightweight featherweight. Like hits like a welterweight. What and he, you know, and he's a quiet. Nice kid, just a sweet kid. He had a tough upbringing, and I think he uses all that energy from his upbringing, all that hunger in the ring. Because I'm telling you what, that's going to be a headache for a lot of guys. He's going to be, he can go multi-division. He can move up to 140, 147 maybe. I don't know, but he's going to be, he can be there as long as he wants to be.
The other day, again, this is a fascinating view you had that I read that, you believe that Dimitri Bivol at light heavyweight may unseat Saul Canelo now, Alvarez?
Oh, yeah. Bivol can fight. Bivol has a high boxing IQ. And he's a big, strong guy.
Yeah.
First, let me say about Canelo. I admire this guy. I can't tell you how much I admire him because he's challenging greatness. He's doing things that nobody's doing now. Nobody's jumping up a 2-3-weight division. Nobody. They're asking for catch weights. He ain't doing that. I don't know if he'll beat Bivol. I'm actually picking Bivol because Bivol can fight. Now, people say, well, Canelo's not going to move up.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
VA confident if he can't beat him. You got to challenge greatness. That's it. I'm sure he is confident. He's walking through the other guys. You know, I tell you the guy, to me, that would be the best fight, the hardest fight. I mean, besides Bivol. I'm picking Bivol to win. If he fights the way I've seen him fight, he should win. But I'm going to tell you the guy who's going to be a problem for Canelo. And Canelo don't want to see. Not the fighter, because Canelo, he'll fight anybody, obviously. His management.
Can I guess who you're going to say?
Yes, please.
Not at light heavyweight, no?
No.
No, Beto Biev will be a hard fight for him, but I think you're going to say Benavidez.
Absolutely. You knew exactly. David Benavidez, and I've been up and close and watched him. Young kid, tall, strong. His hand speed is off the charts.
Very direct, isn't he?
And he's and tough as they come. Yeah. Can punch like a son of a gun. And he got a lot of heart. A lot of, you know, he's got that the Azteca warrior, you know, mentality, Mexican warrior mentality. No. I'm not saying, you know, boxers will fight anybody. We know that. You know, we'll take care of, you know, we'll fight King Kong. Yeah. But the managers, you know, trying to get the manager's job. My manager used to tell me, because I used to tell my manager, line them up, because they were calling me all out. Everybody was calling me out. Line them up. I'll go right down one at a time. And I'll never forget. He said, Ray, you can't fight anybody that wants to fight you. That's physically not possible. He said, my job is to get you the best fight for the most money. That's my job. Mm-hmm. And so I was remembering, meaning Canelo's people, that's what they're doing. I think not say, I think Canelo fight anybody, and he's doing that. I think it's just people realize that Benavidez would be a headache. I think Benavidez would be the hardest fight. I think they're gonna stay away from that as long as they could until they have to fight. The problem with Benavidez is he keeps eating himself out of a division, keeps eating himself out of weight divisions, you know. Yeah. But he's a big guy, so I understand. To make 68 is very difficult. So he'd have to go fight, probably fight at 175. So, you know, but Canelo's the best in the world right now. Best pound for pound fighter.
There you have it. We will be back next week previewing a little bit of Triple G because he's back in action against Ryota Murata, unifying the middleweight division. What a great fight that will be for us to get stuck into. If you can't join us live on Saturday night on TalkSport from 10 o'clock, make sure you subscribe to this podcast because all the top quality guests will feature here every single Monday morning. You can do it via iTunes. Fight Night is what you're looking for. And the Fight Night podcast is available on the TalkSport website, talksport.com. Have a great week. Catch you next time.